Welcome to the Ask the Expert show, where the experts offer you educational information from local experts in the field of legal health, financial, and home improvement. Join us every week at this time for great educational information from lawyers, doctors, contractors, and specialists in their field. Sit back and enjoy the next hour of Ask the Experts.
Hello and welcome to Ask the Experts. I'm Lee Richards, and my guest today, and we're doing this a very special way, Michael W. Cardamone, attorney at law from Cardamone Law, LLC. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
So far, so good. Thank goodness.
Good.
To be able to do this electronically is an amazing thing. You see it all over radio and TV because of the coronavirus. COVID-19 has totally changed our life. This is a new reality, as they say.
And it has. And
to be able to talk to you is a pleasure.
You too, Lee. It's good to be back.
Let's give out the phone number and your website to reach Michael by phone with questions on this very interesting conversation, which does relate to the coronavirus. 215-206-9068 to reach Michael. And your website is again what?
It is www.cardamonelaw.com. So that's CardamoneLaw.com.
All right. And we'll make sure that you give that out. I'm going to let you do that today. I'm going to put you to work.
Also, Lee, if people want to email me, that's perfectly fine.
Oh, what's the address?
Yes, it's Michael, so M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at cardamonelaw.com.
I'm writing it down. I may email you. Actually, some very interesting. Now, you specialize, we should say, right off the bat, in workers' comp, et cetera. And,
yes.
And a lot of stuff has been in the news lately on how the new assistance that's coming from the government, so forth and so on. How is that affecting workers' rights, workers' comp, et cetera? I've already been informed by my union that people like me, for instance, really probably cannot collect anything because we are artists. We're considered artists. And so we don't work 9 to 5 every day. And we're not covered by any of this. So if we don't work, that's it. But so many people out of work, and some actually would want to, do the unemployment thing if they can. But what if you go to work and you pick up the virus? Have you been getting a lot of calls about coronavirus from people who claim that it is a work-related exposure?
Not yet, Lee. However, I'm expecting to see that in the next couple of weeks. There's been a lot of discussion between attorneys and on LinkedIn and Facebook threads about the viability of a work-related coronavirus claim. Coronavirus would be essentially an occupational disease which is covered by the Pennsylvania Workers' Comp Act. So you can have an orthopedic injury, for example, a back injury, a knee injury, a shoulder injury. But occupational diseases are also covered. For example, black lung disease, asbestos, things like that. So while it's not enumerated in the Pennsylvania Workers' Comp Act, it is something that an injured worker could pursue. However, in my opinion, I think they're going to be very difficult claims. The main reason is, how will somebody be able to convince a judge? And we don't have juries in workers' comp. We have a judge and or a doctor, because you need to present medical evidence that the exposure was in fact work-related as opposed to transmitted by a family member. So that issue is called causation, which means the injured worker has to prove that it's more likely than not that the exposure came from work. And I think that's a very difficult standard to meet. And also, you have to give the requisite notice as well under the Workers' Comp Act. So you have 120 days to give notice. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty long period of time. But the key issue is going to be the causation. And you know, eliminating non-work-related transmission possibilities is going to be pretty difficult. So I have a feeling they're going to be difficult cases to win.
Anybody who's out in the world, people. Anybody who's in a store, walking down the street, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, pinpointing the exact moment of transmission is going to be very difficult. And, you know, I think in that situation, it could require proof that other colleagues were sick, which could be blocked through patient confidentiality laws, such as HIPAA. And I think the more widespread the coronavirus becomes, the harder it's going to be for an injured worker to trace the illness back to the workplace.
Okay, but this injured worker, we'll call them injured because of the they got sick. So, but they can attempt to bring a coronavirus workers' compensation claim.
Correct. Absolutely. You can absolutely file what's called a claim petition. You can allege coronavirus as the nature of the injury. Then you would put, you know, which dates it disabled you, whether you gave notice or not, and how so. So you can still pursue it. What I'm saying is I just think they're going to be vigorously defended. And, of course, the insurance carriers are going to set up an independent medical examination, and they're going to have their doctor take a look at the records and the testimony of the injured worker and try to piece it all together. And they, of course, come at it from a different perspective, so they're going to be much more cynical. I'm not discouraging people from pursuing it. I just think on the merits, on a particular case, it's going to be very tricky.
So you've obviously given it a lot of thought because you're home and you have plenty of time to think about what would you need? What kind of elements would you need to actually prove the case in favor of the worker?
Well, the key is going to be the medical evidence. So you could have an injured worker say, hey, Mike or Mr. Cardamone, I believe I got, you know, the coronavirus from work because that's where I am all day and I'm not around anybody at home. I live by myself. So I'm kind of excluding other possibilities, but you still need a medical expert on your side, either by a written report, if you're claiming less than 52 weeks of disability, or if it's open-ended, you would have to take the deposition of a doctor. So you would need a doctor also on your side, you know, a physician, either a family doctor or infectious disease doctor to opine that yes, it's work related and in a more likely than not type of scenario. So the key element just keeps coming back to the same thing. It's causation. And, you know, how can somebody establish that it was in fact transmitted to them at work? I don't know how the judges are going to be deciding these cases. Maybe the more sympathetic ones that are more bent towards injured workers will have more favorable outcomes on a particular set of facts, but I'm a little bit skeptical about where these cases are going to go.
That's assuming that the claimant survives. What if they don't?
That's right. Well, if they don't, then, you know, the estate, they could pursue a death claim. You're still going to have the same type of burden of proof. So I think it's going to be, you know, even more difficult in that scenario. So it sounds like from what I've been reading that unfortunately when people get sick, it's a pretty quick downhill process. You know, and then there's less time to sort of investigate what's been going on and so on. So you can bring a death claim if somebody believes they have a work-related death. But again, that doesn't really change the difficulty with the causation issue and proving that it was transmitted at work.
Now, obviously, there are some professions where the possibility of success with a claim like this is higher. Excuse me. For instance, a airline, I won't call a stewardess. What do they call them today? Attendant or whatever?
Flight attendant
on a flight from Italy to the United States 3 weeks ago. Higher risk, right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely part of the equation. You know, if you can establish that you are working with a class of people that are at higher risk, I think that's very helpful to meeting the burden of proof. I don't think it's outcome determinative, meaning I don't think that's going to be enough because it's not an enumerated, because it's a new virus, so to speak. It's not listed in the act as an occupational disease. There are certain listed conditions or diseases where there's a rebuttable presumption, they call it, that there's a higher incidence of disease in certain fields or sectors of the economy.
Oh, so it has to be already written, but it's something brand new.
It doesn't. But what I'm saying is now I think what we're left with is just the very standard burden of proof in a regular workers' comp case, meaning if this had been listed in the act as one of the enumerated illnesses where there's a rebuttable presumption of a higher incidence of this disease, it would be different. But because it's not listed there, my interpretation of the Workers' Comp Act is that we're left with just a regular standard of proof in any workers' comp.
So you would have to go down your regular list and check things off.
Yes, you know, was the injured worker an employee? You know, not an independent contractor because they're not covered. Two, were they injured in the course of employment? That's going to be the key element here. Three, did they give proper notice? Four, you know, was it disabling? And if so, for what period of time and so on? So you still got to use your regular checklist.
Did they give proper notice? Excuse me, boss, I'm going to have coronavirus 2 weeks from now. You can't.
No, what I'm talking about.
I don't get it.
That's a good question. I should be clear about that.
You put me in for a vacation.
Right. If we all had a crystal ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
The issue is once you have been injured on the job or think that your condition could be related to your employment, you have 120 days maximum to give notice to your employer that I got injured at work and here's what I'm claiming. You don't actually get wage loss benefits until you give notice if you have an accepted claim. So ideally it's within 21 days, but the max by law is 120 days. If you don't give notice within that 120 day period, the claim is forever barred. So it's not notice ahead of time. It's notice once you believe you have a work-related condition.
All right, so they have time. They have the 120 days.
That's right.
All right, excellent. Listen, we're going to come back right after our break, and we're going to ask a few more questions about this and see where we're going to go, because I'll bet you're going to get phone calls about it.
I think so, too.
People don't even think about this stuff. Right now, everybody's wondering where they're going to get chicken and toilet paper.
That's right.
And trust me when I tell you, I have gone from store to store, and the shock of seeing the empty shelves. So yeah,
I agree. If everybody would settle down just a little bit and just maybe get groceries and supplies for a week or two instead of a decade, that would help everybody.
My mistake was I didn't go out and stock up like everybody else because I figured, it's always going to be there, right? Wrong.
That's right.
Wrong. All right. We're going to take our break and we'll be right back with Michael Cardamone from Cardamone Law right after this.
The Cardamone Law Firm is an extremely rare law firm that dedicates 100% of its practice to the strong representation of injured workers under the Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Act. Attorney Michael Cardamone is an outstanding work injury lawyer with 5 convenient offices throughout Pennsylvania from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh and will make home visits upon request. Attorney Michael Cardamone has been recognized by the Best Attorneys of America, Super Lawyers, Top 100 in Pennsylvania, and has a perfect 10 out of 10 rating on Avvo. Attorney Cardamone brings his fighting spirit to each and every case he works on to safeguard the rights of people injured at work. The firm possesses the skill, experience, and resources necessary to go head-to-head with any defense firm or employer. Cardamone Law has defeated dozens of multi-million dollar companies. Call Cardamone Law 7 days a week at 215-206-9068 for a free and comprehensive consult. That's 215-206-9068 or go to cardamonelaw.com.
Welcome back to Ask the Experts. I'm Lee Richards. Michael Cardamone from Cardamone Law is with us today. We're talking about coronavirus and workers' compensation claims. Very interesting topic. Very timely, of course. What about all the people working in the supermarkets and stuff like that? They're exposed on an everyday basis to the virus. Are they going to have any leg to stand on, so to speak, if they get sick?
Possibly. It really depends, again, on the merits of each particular case. I mean, you have to, I go back to the causation issue. I mean, they're going to have the same problem, I believe, establishing that within reasonable medical certainty, because with something invisible like this and without the rebuttable presumption that some other diseases because this is a new situation, I think whoever it is, a supermarket attendant, a flight attendant, even a worker on a ship, a hospital worker, I think they're going to have a difficult time proving on an individual case where that transmission occurred, you know, either at work or what if it was somebody at home that transmitted it to them.
Right.
I think it's just a very difficult, concept for no matter what somebody's position is and where they work.
Right.
Even if it's a class of people that are just in general more exposed, like a nurse or somebody.
Well, I heard that the statistics of healthcare workers getting the coronavirus have increased greatly compared to the general population. Is this true? Do you know?
I think so. I mean, I've been reading that as well, that, you know, X amount of nurses, in a certain, I think there's pretty good data from South Korea and China, and the U.S. data is just, it's a fluid thing, obviously. We're getting more data every single day, but I think there is a higher prevalence of it, and that can be helpful evidence. I mean, that's part of
it's a cluster.
You know, pursuing one of these claims is to show that there's a higher incidence, and it's a more likely than not scenario in workers' comp. We don't have to prove a criminal standard of proof, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a more likely than not scenario. Again, that being said, I still think it's an uphill battle.
All right, how about this one? Okay, the nurses, the healthcare workers, the supermarket workers, the person at the drugstore, knowing the risk they run by going into work, consider that all the businesses have shut, so many businesses have shut down, the courts are closed, law offices are closed, lucky you have a telephone, right? But
yeah.
knowing the risk, they still choose to go into work, into the line of fire, so to speak, of this virus. Now, how would that affect their case?
It would not at all. So workers' comp, if you look at the bigger picture, it's a non-fault system, which means it doesn't matter if an injured worker was injured because of their own fault, the employer's fault, or nobody's fault.
Ah.
If you're injured in the course and scope of employment, you are covered. However, there are exceptions, of course. If somebody has a self-inflicted, if somebody takes a knife and they cut their finger on purpose, of course, that doesn't count. Or if an injury was caused by intoxication, there are some exceptions. But in general, fault's not an issue. And so somebody that might know there's a higher risk of getting injured in a particular job, that has no bearing on it. If they're injured, they're still going to be covered, assuming they can prove their case.
I'm so glad I asked that question, because that clears up a lot for people who may consider making that call to you.
I think so too, Leah. There, a lot of people have this idea that, negligence is an issue, and maybe it was my fault, maybe I should have put on those gloves I was rushing around and trying to save someone's life, and I just didn't have time to change gloves or put my mask on. And I think, you know, part of this may be my fault. It's not relevant. If they contracted this at work and they can prove it, that's a viable claim, even if they knew ahead of time that it was a risky endeavor.
Okay, so suppose they get sick now. Now they have the 120 days to hopefully survive the illness, so forth and so on. But if they get sick, do they have to go to a specific type of doctor? How is this all working now? What would be the procedure if somebody listening today, and I hope nobody gets sick. I mean, we don't want this, but it's happening. So we're dealing with it.
It's happening a lot.
So who should they call? Who should they see?
Well, the first thing is you want to tell somebody in a supervisory or ownership capacity that they, you know, they believe they got injured or exposed to the virus at work. That should trigger, if the employer is acting appropriately, they don't always do that, but that should trigger them to basically fill out an incident report. And then if there's a panel list of doctors, usually the employers have that where they want you to see their physician in the first 90 days. I think in this situation, it would most likely be a, you know, general practitioner. There's not really a requirement. As long as somebody's competent, meaning they've had experience, you know, giving out this test and reading tests and diagnosing this or similar diseases, I think they'll be competent in terms of their opinion. So most likely probably be a family doctor type of situation. But, you know, giving notice, making it clear, you don't have to give written notice. Verbal notice is okay. But, of course, written notice is just better. And it's harder for them to argue that they didn't have it. And then the next step is asking whether the they have that panel list of physicians or whether they can see their own doctor.
Okay, what if things... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. Once notice is given, the insurance company, the workers' comp carrier for whoever the employer is, they have 21 days to investigate and either issue one of three documents: a notice of comp payable accepting the claim, a notice of temporary comp payable temporarily accepting it but giving themselves the right to revoke that and deny it within 90 days, or just a flat out denial. So once notice is given, that triggers the clock for the insurance carrier to do an investigation.
So many thoughts about this are going through my head. The person, what if the person gets severely ill? And it's not a matter of going to a panel doctor or your family doctor. You're rushed to the hospital and put on life support. You don't have a choice who you're going to go to.
I agree. And that happens in a lot of situations. You know, I've had clients who fell, you know, 20 feet off a ladder and they had to get rushed to whatever the nearest hospital was. And so their bills will still get paid. The doctor's opinions from that particular facility, you know, will still be deemed competent. And so there are situations where it's just an emergency, as you said, and you don't have time to, you know, ask for the panel doctors and then wait 3 days for someone to get back to you. You just have to get your situation addressed quickly.
Right. You know, this has become a situation, what I call the new normal, where a lot of people have been willing to help other people in various ways. And one way that you could help your neighbor, your friend, your family member is to actually discuss this with them and let them know that they heard, that you heard the show and you heard Michael Cardamone discussing the topic with me, because I don't think people would even consider this a possibility when it may be a claim.
I agree, Lee. I think because it's something that's evolving right before our eyes, I don't think a lot of people in general are thinking about this as a workers' comp situation. I think most people will kind of jump to the conclusion, you know, that they can file for unemployment comp, which may be true. And but, you know, shows like this and people blogging about it and law firms putting on webinars and things like that about this topic, the more it gets out there to the public, the more people will probably want to pursue the claims. you know, as long as they legitimately think it was transmitted at work and they have some kind of, you know, competent evidence to support that, then they should try it and move forward.
So in your thoughts about this, give me a list, a little bit of a list of some of the professions, some of the types of work where people could indeed contract coronavirus and maybe even have a claim. You don't have to be, you know, the head exec of a company. It could be just about anything. But there are some people who may be more at risk, and you may have thought about those areas of work. What are they?
I would pinpoint the essential workers, the people who are basically working currently. And even if you backtrack a little bit before the shutdown got more strict, you know, there are people who don't have symptoms. They're exposed to it, but they don't manifest any symptoms for, I think, up to 11 days, although the average, I think, is about 3 to 5 day period where you start feeling the symptoms, if you are going to get symptoms. There's some people who just don't feel anything. You know, that would include nurses, people working in the grocery store, you know, first responders, doctors, you know, these, you know, even restaurant workers, although right now it's supposed to be takeout only, there's still going to be some people working together, you know, cooks, and then dropping off food to the public. So, but if you backtrack a little bit before the shutdown got really serious, there could have been people exposed to this that weren't quote unquote essential workers, just anybody. It could be a lawyer, it could be a teacher in a high school.
This has been going on longer than we knew. I looked back at news stories from the beginning of February and beyond, and China knew all about it. But let's not go there because we're at the end of the show.
Yeah, we can continue next time.
Okay. Let's make sure that everybody has your phone number, 215-206-9068. This is Michael W. Cardamone, Cardamone Law, LLC. CardamoneLaw.com is the website. And if you want to email Michael, do it today. Michael@Cardamone.com. Is that correct?
It's Michael@CardamoneLaw.com.
Okay, that's why I thought that and I didn't write it down. Okay, there we go. Michael, be careful. Stay safe. Be well.
You too.
Thank you.
You too. Be careful, everybody. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And this is Lee Richards. Thanks for joining us on Ask the Experts.
Thanks for listening to the Ask the Experts show today. Join us again next week for more specialists in their field of legal health, financial, and home improvement.